And now, it's time to sit back and enjoy the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Broadcast.
Me for you and you for me alone.
2018. Hope and Chris finish the last episode of Star Wars The Clone Wars. Luckily, dependable Dave Filoni and crew create Rebels with new characters, new places, and new adventures, thus keeping hope alive for this podcast. Welcome to J-Guys and Jedi.
Hi everyone, welcome to a brand new episode of J-Guys and Jedi, a weekly podcast covering every episode of Star Wars Rebels. In this episode, thanks to Rex's intel, Ezra and Sabine, Zeb, and Chopper head out to an abandoned Republic medical station with the hopes of finding some much-needed supplies when they encounter new enemies. However, the stakes become much higher. There will be two new Inquisitors lurking in the darkness, Commander Meilu Run makes his return, and Zeb finally gets to shine this season. We're talking always to There Are. How you doing, Chris?
Good. How are you doing?
Great!
Better than last week, huh?
Oh, gosh, guys. We actually were supposed to record this episode last week, but, like, right when we started recording, my Skype signed me out. And I was like, what the fuck? And so I
You literally got to say, hello, and welcome to J-Guys and Jedi.
Yeah. And Skype signed me out, and then it said, like, it locked me out of my account. So then I spent, like, the next, like, hour and a half, like, going through trying to unlock my account. So we didn't record this episode last week, so heads up, I haven't read this outline in over a week. I'm gonna have to, like, it's gonna be a fuck up. It's gonna be great. But then it actually worked out better today because I wouldn't have had time to do an outline today for the show, so I already had a completed outline done, ready to go. And that's because I got my new car today, finally. My old boy Bob broke down 2 weeks ago, and I had him for 15 years. He was a really good car, and I loved him. He was my first car. I've had him for 15 years, and he finally kicked the bucket, and I've been car searching ever since, and I got my Grande today.
Yeah, I was going to say, you're even naming it already.
I know, because it's red on the outside and black on the inside, and I almost named it Maul. But I decided to, it reminded me more of the Grand Inquisitor, and his real name is Alexei. And the reason his name is Alexei is because of the Grand Inquisitor's character in mine and Megan's roleplay. We reformed him into a good guy, and he's, like, reliable and stuff like that, but he still has, like, the red and the black and stuff like that. So, his name is Alexei. He's also gonna go by Grande at times, because we're gonna have a Grande old time together.
I hope so.
Me too, knock on wood, because I don't need to buy another car anytime soon.
Get one of those little champagne bottles and christen his front bumper.
No, I decided not to get dent protection on my car.
Oh, okay. Yeah, never mind then.
That was like an extra like $400
just,
on my
just
thing.
Just pour out the bottle on the front bumper. get a bottle of
I'll just squirt some water on it.
Fake cream soda and dump it out on the front of the and then hose it off because it'll just get sticky if you leave it there.
I would say it's very clear you don't own a car.
True.
But, yeah, I finally got my car, but I'm very tired today, and I haven't looked at this outline in over a week, so we're going to have a fun time today, Jedis and Jedis, because I don't fucking remember what I wrote.
You'll remember it. It'll all come back to you.
But we have a note here, because I mailed you a Grievous comic.
Yes.
This was the Age of Republic General Grievous that came out a few months ago at the time of this recording. It's been several months by the time this episode comes out.
Uh-huh, it's and part it's like of a one-shot.
Yeah, it was a one-shot, and it's part of that line, and it's actually the first time we actually see Grievous, what he looked like before the armor. In canon, I should say. In canon.
Yes. I thought it was okay. The art was nice in it. The presentation was nice. Besides getting a look at, you know, pre-greevy, there wasn't much to it. You know what I mean?
It's like, a one shot. They can only do so much with it.
Right. It's it's a common complaint that I have as an old guy with new comics that it's, you know, a lot of art and very little story. And the story in this one is basically takeaway is Grievous is a killer.
It actually takes place after Lair of Grievous.
Mm.
It's like supposed to be like the follow-up story, and I know that was your favorite episode of Clone Wars, and it was supposed to be a follow-up. So like when he was talking about, like, I think in the opening scroll it talked about how like Jedi came to his home or something like that. Like that was what it was in reference to. So he went out and burned their home. But yeah. Like Grievous has a Force vision, and it's kind of trippy.
Yeah, but that's about it. Not any deep insights into him, but it was nice. It's the art is beautiful in it.
Yeah, I forgot who did that.
The cover is really nice.
Yeah, but I saw it. I was like, it's a Grievous comic, and I need to send it to Chris now.
I needed that. Yeah, for sure.
So I'm glad you like. I like the Age of series that they've been doing, because they've did all the Age of Republic, which are now done. Now they're in Age of Rebellion, and then they're gonna do Age of Resistance soon, within the next couple months, and it's all like leading up to like Force Awakens, The Last Skywalker, or Rise of Skywalker, whatever the fuck it's called.
Whatever, the next movie, Episode 9.
And they actually just announced their line of, like, books and comics leading up to the new movie, too. So we're going to have some books and comics leading up to it. The only thing I kind of wish when I saw the new line announced, and I know they're all supposed to be tied in with the movies, because I know, like, Clone Wars and Rebels both had, like, books that tied into it and stuff like that. And they have released a couple of comics, but they've been in the kids' line with the Star Wars Adventures. But I was kind of hoping, like, Resistance would get, like, a book of some kind. Because they're just not treating the show like they treated the other shows. Like, Rebels had several books tie-ins, Clone Wars had several book tie-ins and stuff like that. And they just don't, they're not doing that with Resistance. And Kaz, they did, like, a little two-issue Kaz.
I think it's harder with Rebels and Resistance because they had such, they have storylines, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So it's hard to, like Clone Wars, you could just do battles, you know?
And to be honest, that was one of our criticisms, because one of the stories that ran along with Rebels was with that kid, Zero Leonis, in the episode where Ezra was undercover as a cadet. And that was actually one of our critiques, was if you hadn't read that book, the episode felt incomplete.
Yeah, and I think especially with Resistance is, it's like the setting of the story has changed in the first season. At the end of the first season, it might not be settled into where they could do storylines that wouldn't ruin, you know, right now. They could, you know, they could do just bland storylines of random things that happen to people on the. You know, when they're on the water planet, but they couldn't do anything that really adds to the story because it's all sort of already there, you know, up
I
to the point.
I don't mind like a background thing though, like a little background story of everyone like before, like, you know, Tam with her grandfather that was an Imperial, like Kaz when he was in the New Republic, Tora and her mother, because actually
that would be more fertile ground to go for.
Because something that's interesting, because it's not stated in the show, but in the Women of Star Wars book that was released before Resistance came out, they have an entry for Tora, and we know from the show that Captain Doza was an Imperial. Tora's mother was a Rebel, and that could be something really cool to explore, would be like Tora, even if it wasn't about Tora, like if it was about like Captain Doza and his wife and like how they met. And, like, she was a Rebel and he was an Imperial. Like, that would be a really cool story to read. And then, like, it ends with them having Tora or something like that. That would be a cool story to read, too.
Yeah, I don't know. Plus, it's aimed at a younger audience, so I'm always all for comics.
Yeah, I mean, they did, too, with Star Wars Adventures. They had, like, a little two-issue mini in the Star Wars Adventures line with Kaz and BB-8. Right. So that was cool. But, I mean, it's not anything like, you know, Kane and the Last Padawan, which ran for 12 issues.
Right. It's like a little story like Property of Ezra Bridger or something.
Yeah. So, but I'm ready to get into this episode. Are you?
I sure am.
Did you like it?
It was okay. This isn't one of my favorite ones lately.
I kind of have that. Like, I remember the first time I watched it, like, I really loved it. But now, like, knowing the greater context of the Inquisitors and stuff, it's pretty okay. I mean, it's fine. So.
Well, let me just put it this way. In your introduction in the beginning, when you said, you know, Ezra, Sabine, Zeb, and Chopper head out to an abandoned Republic medical station with the hopes of finding much needed supplies when they encounter new enemies. However, the stakes become much higher. That could be a generic description of like a good amount of episodes. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that's maybe my main complaint with this one.
That is the generic description of that was on Wikipedia that I copy and paste.
Right. But I mean, that could describe a lot of, you could just change a few words like medical supplies to power cells or something like that, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And X and Y are on a mission to blah to get blah when they meet a formidable enemy.
Yeah. Well, you ready?
I'm ready.
Always Two There Are is the 20th episode of Star Wars Rebels, and it was released on October 28th, 2015. It was written by Kevin Hopps and directed by Brad Rao. Some extra information for you. The Seventh Sister is voiced by Sarah Michelle Gellar, best known for her role as Buffy Summers in Buffy the Vampire Slayer. She is also the wife of Freddie Prinze Jr., who voices Kanan in the series. They met filming I Know What You Did Last Summer, and they co-starred together as Fred and Daphne in the live-action Scooby-Doo movies. The Seventh Sister is Amiri Allen, the same species as Luminara and Barrow Sophie. I only note this because, to this day, I still believe that the Seventh Sister should have been Barrow Sophie the entire time. But I digress, and you will hear multiple notes of that throughout the fucking season. Anyway, this episode was released on Halloween week in 2015. It was written to be a haunted house type episode with stories about dangers lurking in the dark. Though, it was purely coincidental that it was released on the same week as Halloween. They did not plan for it. In notes that I'm glad they put into the StarWars.com notes, because I've been talking about this in Season 1, Admiral Constantine's hushed complaints about the Inquisitors are meant to make clear the separation between the military and the spiritual sensibilities within the ranks of the Empire. Officers like Admiral Monty will have similar misgivings towards Darth Vader in future films. This film episode, blah, blah, blah. This episode, I haven't read these notes in a week. This episode shows that Ezra is making an effort to learn Chopper's mechanical language. He's not fluent like Sabine or Hera, but Zeb still can't understand a word that the droid says. The medical station is the same design seen in the Clone Wars in Season 1 of the series. Throughout the first season, the Grand Inquisitor was just called Inquisitor. This is the first episode that gave him the title Grand, to show that he was the leader of the Inquisitorius under Vader. The Seven Sisters droids are ID-9 Seekers, and the production team nicknamed them Parrot Droids, which is what I call them in the notes. This episode marks the return of Commander Mayluran, the fruit-inspired nickname Zeb and Ezra made up in the Season 1 episode Fighter Flight. In Rebels Recon for the episode, Pablo Hidalgo pointed out that the Seventh Sister is the first female villain that we have seen in this current era of Star Wars, not in this era of Star Wars, being like this rebellion kind of era. And finally, Filoni mentions that the reason that they go by brother and sister is to give the feeling of a cult. Pablo Hidalgo said that while they still, to this day, haven't revealed the numbers of what the numbers in the Inquisitors mean, it does suggest that there is a degree of competition between them. With the death of the Grand Inquisitor, there is now a power vacuum that the other Inquisitors are competing for. You know who's also competing for people's numbers?
Competing for the vacuum. Mine!
Oh, don't put it in the vacuum. That hurts.
Yoda wants to put it in the vacuum, though.
Okay.
Sucked out into space, not blown out.
Hey, don't say I didn't warn you, Yoda.
Oh. A hospital a Jedi does not need? A question for Yoda there is?
Yes, from Dr. Bill Robinson. So Dr. Bill sent us a photo, and it's his face on Yoda's body, and the resemblance is uncanny. So, Dr. Bill Robinson said,
Yoda does not see it at all.
Well, Dr. Bill says, "Dear Jedi Guys and Jedi, I have a question for Yoda. The subject matter is a bit personal. See the attached photo as proof of my question for him. Yoda, are you my dad? Space Father's Day is coming up, and I'd just like to know."
Yoda does not think he looks like Yoda at all. Mm-mm.
I think he looks like you, Yoda.
Nope.
You have a little bit of a beard.
Maybe the same outfit, maybe. Someone trying to look like Yoda, maybe.
Yoda, how many kids in the galaxy do you secretly have?
That Yoda knows of?
And Yoda just runs.
name was?
Dr. Bill Robinson?
Robinson. Yoda remembers a Mrs. Robinson. Mrs. Robinson, are you trying to seduce Yoda? But Yoda only danced. Mrs. Robinson, not Yoda's girl. She just a girl who says Yoda's the one. The Bill is not my son.
All right, well, now we have an answer, Dr. Bill. He's not your father, so you don't have to buy a Space Father's Day present for him. That's nice.
Well, maybe then.
Dr. Bill, run.
Maybe looks a little like Yoda, yes.
How many kids have you not paid child support for?
Oh, a Jedi needs not money. No.
Just like the idea of like Yoda just being like, well, you see, turns and runs. Bye.
Many tadpoles has Yoda released. Not responsible he is.
Well, according to Legally Blonde, that could be reckless abandonment. Legally Blonde is a perfect movie.
Yoda has to go now.
Bye, Yoda. That's actually true. Somebody did a study of it. Legally Blonde, like, down to, like, the minute, follows the structure of a perfectly written movie. Like, down to the minute. Like, whether you like the plot or not, like, the actual structure of the writing is, like, the exact format of, like, a perfectly written one. Down to, like, the minute. So
That is if you want to take the framing of what a perfectly written movie is.
Yeah, like...
By whose standards?
Or maybe... what was it? Like, now you make
Now we're getting into film theory, Hope. This is my domain. I used to have take script writing classes where they would teach us that, you know, this, each page is a minute, this many minutes in, you need to do this by this time. Character arcs need to have this in them. So maybe by those methods, they followed it perfectly and wrote it really well.
Yeah.
I barely remember seeing the movie, and I remember being completely surprised that it was like a really good movie.
It's such a good movie.
It was like there was another one like that had Ant-Man in it.
Yeah.
And another blonde teen star who was, I think, his sister or stepsister in the movie. It was a high school, you know, sort of Mean Girls like story. And I can't remember the name of it. And that one was really good, too.
Of course, now I can't find it. But what it is that I remember my coworker who was in college for film. She was telling me about it because they were teaching it in her class, and like she was showing me like the report of it and stuff like that. And of course, they just announced another movie, so now I can't find it because that's on Google. But like the format or something, like from like the exposition to like the rise of tension to like the denouement to the climax and stuff. It follows the like that structure perfectly, apparently, like to like the minute or something.
The movie they taught us in class, the teacher brought out as his, you know, just very, very typical, like typical Hollywood movie script structure was Basic Instinct. And we watched it every day for a whole semester.
Every day?
Every day we watched the movie like beginning to end. Then we read the script, the shooting script. and which was what the, you know, not what the movie came. We compared it to the movie, and then we went over it scene by scene, cut by cut, and discussed for 10 weeks. Yep.
I had to teach them.
Never want to see that movie again. I know it by heart.
I had to do something like that, sort of. I forgot what song it is. But, like, I took an anthropology class, and at the beginning and the end of every class, the teacher would play it. But it was, like, one of those, like, really cheesy pop songs that's, like, super, like, go out and find your own sunshine. She was, like, just like this song, we will reunite the world with, like, love and stuff. And I'm, like, what the fuck does this have to do with anthropology? Like, by the beginning of it, and now when I hear that song, I'm like, oh, I hate this song so much. I heard it, like, twice a day, three times a week for an entire semester, and I was just like, nope, I don't need to hear this song.
Not the effect that she intended, I think.
Ugh. Well, you ready for Act 1?
I am.
Here we go. We start with everyone chilling out and having a little R&R on the Ghost. Grunkle Rex is part of the crew, playing space chess with Zeb. Sabine is tinkering with her helmet. Hold on a second. Oh, okay, much better. Kanan is finishing Jedi training with Ezra for the day. Kanan wants his Padawan to levitate Chopper, and Sabine and the little murder droid play a joke on Ezra. Chopper locks down his metal feet so the kid can't lift him up. Much to Kanan's annoyance, Rex gives Ezra some life advice and talks about how cool Anakin Skywalker was and how Rex was the president of the Skywalker Club. And Space Dad is like, well, my space son is the best son, and you shut up, old man. Don't you ever look at my space son again. And Space Mom Hera comes in with a mission for Sabine, Chopper, and Zeb to go to an abandoned medical station that Rex told them about because it's a war and they need medical supplies. As Space Dad and Grunkle Rex start to fight again, Ezra puts himself on the mission because he's sick of everyone fighting over him. With the minivan, Phantom all loaded up, all the kids head off for an adventure! And they arrive at the medical station. Somehow they arrive at the medical station, but the Phantom doesn't have hyperdrive, but whatever, it doesn't make fucking sense. And they land inside. It's dark and spooky, since all the power is out. And Chopper is like, guys, I might be a murder bot, but this place gives me the heebie-jeebies. And Zeb is amazed that Ezra can actually understand Chopper at all. With no power, Zeb has to open and close all the doors manually for them, which doesn't help with the spooky feeling, because with no power, it's harder for them to escape! Sabine pauses in the dark to tack the wall with some of her graffiti. She thinks she hears something in the darkness, but she doesn't see anything. But the audience does see a little parrot droid lurking about, and a female voice confirms its position. And the space kids find the control room and get the station all powered up. Meanwhile, Admiral Constantine and Alexander Kallus is talking shit about the fifth brother who we met last week. And Constantine is all like, oh, they use magic. That's so Clone Wars timeline, like a barf. And they get a call from the medical center that the kids powered on, got all powered up. And Kallus is ready to write it off, but the fifth brother is like, I must continue being dramatic, just like Grande from last season. Tis but the enemy. And Kallus raises an eyebrow like, right, you know that from, a quote-unquote disturbance. Got it. Well, let's just get going then. And the fifth brother is like, pshaw, whatever, bro. You guys will just get in my way. I'm going alone. Bye. And he leaves. And back with the kids, Chopper shuts down the base again, except for the command center. They can't read the files with the medical supplies, so they leave Chopper behind to work on those. And the kids head out into the darkness to look for medical supplies. What'd you think of Act 1?
Not bad. If I was Rex, I'd be like, when Kanan's like, where are Jedi Master told? If I were Rex, I'd be like, who? Which one? Who did you know? You know? Because I knew a bunch of those guys. So, you know, you'd think he would have been like, did you know so-and-so? Did you know so-and-so? I really love these mystics are a necessary line.
Yes.
Another lightsaber flashlight.
I actually have a note about that.
Do you?
But I think it's in Act 2 that I put the note. But since we're talking about it now, I'll say it now. So I was talking to Megan about that. And it's her husband's most hated thing in Star Wars. Her husband, Lauren, hates when Jedi do that. But it's actually one of my personal favorite things. I love when Jedi use their lightsabers as flashlights. I find it so hilarious. And it's just one of those things of like, yeah, duh, of course they would. It's a light. But
and you got it ready.
I just find that so funny because her husband just hates when they do that. He's like, that's not what a lightsaber is for.
Yeah, well, is he a Jedi? I don't think so. And my only other note is, okay, so he's understanding, but this language, the droid language that, like, some people seem to speak in... It seems almost like different from droid, especially now we're in Disneyland. Like before they were all the ones that sort of look like R2 sort of had the same sort of like whistly beepy sort of thing. But and like Goldie and Clone Wars and stuff like that. But now that we get into the newer stuff, it's almost like all the droids have their own individualized either dialect or Chopper doesn't sound any, his language is comprised of completely different sounds than R2, say, you know, or BB-8 or Bucket, you know. So it's like, is there a standard astromech droid language that's like R2's language, and then these guys all have like variations, you know? Can you like go in and switch the language and have Chopper talk like R2, you know?
I think it's all technically like considered, I've seen a few sources call it binary, but I know it's not like ones and zeros. But I do think like it's a standard like droid language, but like some droids like 3PO can like speak basic as well. But like when it's just like all the beeping and stuff like that, it is, I've seen a couple sources, maybe it was fan fiction now that I think about it. It might have been fan fiction.
I mean, really, R2 is as smart, if not smarter, than 3PO. You'd think they'd just be able, like, he'd have the chip size to speak basic, too, you know? I don't know. But, you know, it makes it a lot more fun, so I'm not going to put it under too much scrutiny.
He would swear all the time if he could speak basic. They can't do that.
That would be awesome, but they're swearing anyway. Whatever language you're in, they're still swearing in it. Some percentage of the people understand him.
I know that Chopper has said at least fuck like 12 times so far in the show.
Oh, yeah.
Just back. 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 So.
We'll have to start cataloging those. But that's all I got for part one.
For me, I do like the spooky feeling of the episode. I like the whole like haunted house kind of feel. I think it's like a fun little setup. They haven't quite done something like this before where it's like dark and close quarters, like everything's kind of tight. There's very little light sources. So like I do like the setting and the feeling of the episode. I think that's really nicely done. But nothing ever too scary where like a kid couldn't watch it, you know?
Right. It's just scary enough for a kid. It's a little scarier than, say, Scooby-Doo, but it's not terrifying. It's not as terrifying as some of the stuff they, you know, with like the alien episodes of Clone Wars.
Yeah,
with Geonosis.
Like the bug. I was just about to say, like the Bug Queen, and you like turn and there's like a zombie.
Yeah. So. And just eating and possessing people and stuff like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Zombie armies of, you know, of skeletons. None of that.
Yeah. My next note is, I know I've said it before, I'll probably say it again. I just love the, like, Imperials versus, like, the Inquisitor's mindset and how they, like, they both kind of hate each other and how they're both kind of against each other. It's just such an interesting thing, and I just wish they did more with it. I really do, and I said that all during season one, and I'm probably going to keep on saying it because... To me, that's one of the most intriguing things in the show so far is just how regular, everyday Imperials react to the Inquisitors.
And yeah, they think they're scam artists. They think they're charlatans, probably.
A bunch of Miss Cleos running around the ship.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, yeah, yeah. Doctor, bunch of Dr. Phils. That's what they should have, a Dr. Phil Inquisitor.
I'm here to help you.
I know you want to go over to the dark side.
Oh, man.
Come on over here. Just sit in my teddy bear lap.
But my big note for this is I was looking at Rex and Kanan's like argument over Ezra and teaching him. And I actually find that like a bit of an interesting argument because Kanan, they both have valid points. And that's why it makes it interesting. Because Kanan, who was trained as a Padawan, like was trained in school and stuff like that. He has experience from Jedi training, but only to a certain point because he was a Padawan. Now, Rex has experience because he worked with multiple Jedi all throughout the Clone Wars. He worked with Jedi like Shaak Ti, like while he was training like as a little shaver and stuff like that. And he saw Jedis use the Force in battle and stuff like that. So he has that experience too. So they both really do have things to offer Ezra, and they both have really valid things to offer Ezra. It's just like because they're butting heads so much, mostly Kanan, that it's making it being a fight. But I like that fight because they both are good teachers and they both have plenty of things to offer, but they're just fighting over like who's going to teach it, semantics, stuff like that.
Yeah, either way, Ezra comes out ahead, so yeah.
And he comes out even better ahead if he listens to both of them.
Right, right.
But yeah, that's really all I have for this for this act.
I was going to say, I hope that's not all you have for this episode.
No.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, we'll see you later.
Yeah, that's how the episode ends. They walk in the dark, never seen again. The end. Rebels ended. It's over. But, well, are you ready for Act 2?
I was born ready. Actually, I was just thinking that.
Yeah, okay. Act 2.
Hope's not buying it. Okay.
Hope is sleepy. Act 2. The kids are roaming around in the dark looking for medical supplies. Zeb messes with Ezra like, "Ooh, you have Jedi powers. Why don't you use those powers to help us, oh great Jedi master?" And Ezra is like, "At least I have powers, and I'm smarter and faster and wonderful." And Sabine's like, "Oh my god, boys, you're both pretty. Shut up and let's get back to work. Oh my god." And in all their bickering, messing with each other, running into things, and having just far too much fun, they walk right past the supplies because, you know, they're teenagers. Except for Zeb, which is an adult, so whatever. Back with Chopper, he's griping about his place in life and those damn kids when he hears what sounds like his voice coming down the hallway. And he goes into the dark to investigate. Moving through the hallways, he calls down one, and his own voice answers him. And he rolls down the next hallway, following the sound. And suddenly, he turns around, and there's a parrot droid! And the droid shocks him and knocks him over, and Chopper calls for help. The kids get the message, and Ezra wants to take a shortcut back to the command center through the vents. You know, because he's a real Jedi, because they always use the vents. And Sabine hops up in there, too, with him, but Zeb gets stuck in the vents, thus separating the space kids. Sabine and Ezra get back to where they think Chopper is, and out of the darkness, they see a parrot droid, and it's not alone. A woman comes out strolling like a badass and lights up her lightsaber. It's another Inquisitor, the Seventh Sister. The kids run, and Sabine works on taking out the parrot droids while Ezra tries to hold off the Inquisitor. Unlike Grande, who would just charge right in, the Seventh Sister is taking her sweet time in her hunt. Running to find Zeb and Chopper, the kids turn a corner, and there's the Fifth Brother, who has just arrived for the party. And the kids pull a hard nope, and they run the other way. And they get through a door, but the Seventh Sister uses the Force to drag Ezra back. Ezra stabs the panel and shuts the door to give Sabine a chance to get away. Trapped, Ezra watches as the Fifth Brother goes in for the kill, but the Seventh Sister blocks it. And the Fifth Brother is like, "Bitch, this kill's mine!" And the Seventh Sister is like, "Kay, you're so stupid! Let's get some info from him first, and then we'll use him as bait." And I don't know why I made Seventh Sister Latina for a moment, but it's because I probably have been watching a lot of One Day at a Time on Netflix, which you should all watch because it was amazing. But anyway, The fifth brother heads out to find Sabine and the seventh sister. The fifth brother heads out to find Sabine, and the seventh sister now has Ezra captured. Bum, bum, bum. But Sabine runs wildly through the hallways until she finds Zeb, still stuck in the vent. And the poor Lasad is like, I was an honor guard. This is the worst way to die. And she gets him out of the vent and catches him up on what happened. And they can't call for Kanan on this one because it could compromise the entire fleet if they come for help. And the kids realize that they're on their own. Back with Ezra, the seventh sister has him captured in the command center. And she talks about what a sucky master Kanan is. And Ezra should come to the dark side because they have cookies. And Ezra is like, well, my master killed the last Inquisitor, so I think he's a badass. And the seventh sister said that that was a surprise, but it also put a big old target on Kanan. All the Inquisitors want him now, so she won't kill Ezra yet. Meanwhile, the fifth brother is still looking for Sabine. She sets a trap with Zeb with mines, but it literally backfires when the Inquisitor throws the bombs at them. Zeb gets pinned under some boxes while Sabine gets knocked out and taken captured too. What'd you think of Act 2?
It was okay. As an old guy, this is what old guys think when they see this. When Ezra like trips Zeb and knocks him over, I'm like, don't do that. You can just like break somebody's leg like that. What a bummer ending to that mission that would be if he like, oh, we were doofing around and I broke Zeb's leg or gave him a concussion.
Zeb's a big guy. It would take a lot to break his leg.
I know, but I'm an old guy. That's how we think. That's all right. The sister, I think her lightsaber looks a little like a stapler.
Oh, come on. I mean, a freaking Ezra has a staple gun for a lightsaber.
She has a staple gun, too. She has a different kind of staple gun, though. And I like the lighting in this. I'm getting the impression that the fifth brother is like the musclehead dummy Inquisitor. He doesn't seem too bright. I'm going to have more notes in the third about the Inquisitors. But it seems like maybe they might like what with Grande meeting his end, they might not they might have used up their best and brightest. That's all I'm gonna say for now.
He got turned into my car.
But that's he's a transformer too. All right, that's all I really got for this part. And I like that the lighting is awesome in this, and the use of like little pieces of dust in the air too. I like that. It works really well.
I'm just gonna go straight down my notes because I wrote these a week ago and I don't remember what I wrote. Here we go.
Okay.
Is it really faster to crawl through the fence than run through the big open hallways back the way you came, Ezra? That's just the plot device and nothing more to separate them.
I guess it's a little more covert if you know there's enemies looking for you, you know, but I don't think that's not what he was saying. That's not the reason he gave for going through. He said that he definitely said this is a shortcut. And it's
and
like
they were like crawling slowly through the vents.
Right. So it might be actually shorter, like in length, but like in the length of time it takes to traverse that, it might not be.
Yeah. I just was like, come on, guys. Now, it's one thing if there's a big vent and they could, like, run through the vents or, like, shimmy through the vents or, like, have more move. But they were, like, slowly clawing through the vents. And I'm just sitting here going, how is this faster? This is just a way to separate Zeb from you guys. Come on.
Yeah, it was that's what I was thinking. It's a device to keep Zeb in one place.
Yeah. I do really like the parrot droids a lot, especially in the scene with Chopper, because, like, they lured him away because they started, like, they were just repeating his voice, and Chopper's like, I hear myself down that hallway. What's going on, guys?
Yeah, and
they're really creepy, too, especially in, like, all the darkness.
Well, they're sort of like a probe droid and a little bit of the mouse robot from episode 4, you know, the little guy that... And they got a little bit also of the pod, you know, the little pod racer maintenance droids from episode 1.
Oh yeah.
They've got a little bit of that to them too. What? So they're sort of a little three in one triple threat. I like them.
They kind of remind me like a touch like monkeys, like, you know, like they're her pet, like, mm-hmm. you know, like they all like they're her eyes to, like, and then, you know, you always have the monkey on the pirate, and, like, when the pirate's looking one way, the monkey sees something and just starts screaming. You're like, ah, there's a thing.
And like, those spider droids in episode 3 that would, like, climb onto a ship and just sort of, or in, they were in Clone Wars, too.
Yeah. So I really like the parrot droids. I don't care if the Inquisitors don't have a good story and a good overall story. I really love the Fifth Sister. I love her so much. Her design is awesome. She's a Miri Allen. I really like Miri Allens. I love her physicality when she moves, like when she was like on her toes above Ezra and she like slinks down on her toes. And Sarah Michelle Gellar does an awesome job voicing her. And I love her little droids. I've always really liked the Fifth Sister, which is part of like my disappointment that the Inquisitors don't have really good overarching stories, because she's so cool. She looks cool. She sounds cool. She's awesome. And I hate that they don't have cool stories, but I've always really loved the Fifth Sister. Every time I see her, I'm like a little bit more gay. So I love her.
I get the idea with her that she's really cocky, but she's a newbie, you know, but she's very aggressive. You know, she's been waiting to do this.
We know from the Darth Vader comics that she's been around for a few years. But we don't know that in the context of this, which is, again, a flaw, because if you don't read the Darth Vader comics, you don't know that. Like, they both have been around since the beginning of the Inquisitors. And this is 15 years, 10, 12 years, 10 years later. So, but like, yeah, but for all we know, she could have always done little missions, and this is her first really big one. But I like how smart she is, too. Like, she uses her droids to, like, scout them out and recon them and, like, separate Chopper from everybody. And, like, I love her. I just love her physicality when she moves. Like, how she just creeps down. She doesn't, like, go running after them. She's just, like, creeping down, moving her lightsaber in the dark. And, like, she's just so creepy. And I love her.
She's like a snakier Ventress.
Yeah. Got it. Yeah. And I love Ventress, too. So I just wish they had much better stories and were like more than just like one-dimensional evil bad guys, because she's just so cool. She's just so cool, and I love her. Love her so much. Which is my follow-up, and I've already kind of touched on this before. One of my flaws about rewatching this series as a whole is knowing the lack of story for the Inquisitors. Because I remember the very first time I saw this episode, when it first came out, I thought all the Inquisitors were so cool. I thought Grande was cool. I thought the Fifth Brother was awesome. I love the Seventh Sister. I was on the edge of my seat this entire episode. Like, this all just felt so fresh and new to me to have these, like, dark force, like, Jedi hunters. And I wanted to know everything about them. But, like, now watching this episode again, knowing that they don't evolve past just kind of looking cool and stuff like that, and they don't evolve past that, it actually really kind of dampens the episode a little bit for me, because I'm like, I don't have the same feeling of, like, oh, what's going to happen? They're so creepy. Who are these guys? I don't know what they are, but I like them. They're going to be cool and stuff. Like, watching it now, it's just like, yeah, but they're not going to do anything with you.
Mm-hmm. I was thinking, okay, we got these new guys here in this part, but that's when my change in attitude with them comes in the next, in by the third part of this, by the end of this.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, I do like that there's a rivalry between there's a rivalry between, like, the Imperials and the Inquisitors. I like that there's a rivalry between the Inquisitors, too, because they're not, like, they're snipping at each other. He's like, I'm going to kill them. And she's like, God, you're stupid. And I like that about them.
I bet it's encouraged between them, you know.
My actually next note is Palpatine really likes to make his pawns fight it out.
Yeah, 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 exactly. It makes sense. The strong ones will survive and the dominant ones will rise to the top, you know?
But I like that, because, like, they're supposed to be working together, but you can tell they clearly don't like each other. And, like,
he acknowledges her dominance, though.
What?
He definitely acknowledges her dominance, though.
Yeah, actually. And it makes me wonder if, like, instead of, like, Grande being number one and everything is, like, 2, 3, 4, 5, I'm wondering if the higher number you have is shows that you're a better Inquisitor. Because we don't know. We still don't know what the numbers mean, or if they're just random, or if we even know that there's... Well, now we know that there's a second sister, because they revealed that at a celebration for the new Jedi Fallen Order game. So we now know there's a second sister. So, like, there's a while there, we're like, well, maybe there's purposely not numbers 2 through 5, because we don't know. But I do like the fact that they're, like, encouraged to, like, they're technically working together, but you have the feeling that at a moment's notice, like, one will shank the other and run.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. No, they want to get back and, like, if they both get back with, you know, when she was just like, no, you know, we don't kill him now, he did the math in his head, like, if I decide to kill him, I'm going to have to fight her. And if I kill him and we get back and all of a sudden that was a mistake, I'm going to lose points on it. And basically he did the math that, like, if he had to fight her, she'd probably win. And he wasn't sure enough of whether killing him would be the best thing to do. So he deferred to her. So she just, yeah, you know, she just showed more power and decisiveness, and he, you know, bowed to it, basically.
Yeah. Total side note, if you want to see the Inquisitors being more bitches to each other, read Charles Soule's run of Darth Vader, because there's definitely a point where they're like, oh, shit's hitting the fan, and one of them, like, cuts off the other one's leg and runs. Like, they're bitches to each other in that comic, yep, too. It's great. I love Zeb's little line when he's stuck in the vent going, I don't want to die this way. I'm the last of my kind. I love Zeb's little line.
It's funny, but it's sad at the same time.
I don't want to die this way. I'm the last of my kind. I love it. I love Zeb so much. This was actually a grip. So this is actual after Ezra gets captured and, like, Sabine is catching Zeb up. And Zeb, I understand that this show is geared towards a younger audience. So, like, Sabine and Ezra are more of, like, the focus characters because they're the younger people for the younger audience. But Zeb asks Sabine what to do when Ezra is captured and asking if she has a plan. And I have a problem with that because Zeb is an adult and he was the captain of the honor guard. This is his strong point, coming up with military strategies to fight people. Like, this is Zeb's, like, strong point. And I understand that Sabine is a very capable person, but he is defaulting to her, the child. And I have a problem with that because it kind of, like, weakens Zeb to me. Because
he's the warrior.
He's the warrior guy who was the captain of the honor guard. And she is a 16-year-old weapons expert, yes, while still very capable. And he's going, Sabine, what should we do? Do you have a plan? Like, what's the plan, Sabine? I don't know what to do. And I just feel like that takes away Zeb. But I'd rather him going, do you have a plan? I don't have a plan. We should figure out a plan. Like, if it was just, like, kind of, like, structured differently, but the way it's presented, it's Zeb is defaulting to the 16-year-old girl. And I have a problem with it because I really feel like that takes a lot away from Zeb's character because this is his thing.
He's kind of still the comedy relief at this point in the show, you know?
Other than a few episodes, he never really gets out of that.
Yeah, but he gets more depth to his character in general, which shades it a little bit, but yeah.
But that's all I have for Act 2.
All right, let's Act 3 this up.
All right, Act 3. Zeb wakes up and he's alone, and the parrot droids are hunting him. But Zeb smash! And he easily takes them out. He also happens to come across the medical supplies that they came here for in the first place, and he grabs a box. He comes across Chopper and boots him back up again. Zeb has a plan, but he's gonna need Chopper's help to do it. Back with Ezra, the Seventh Sister is lightly torturing him for information. She hasn't really started her quote-unquote fun yet. And Ezra is doing okay stalling her, but he's not really in a good place right now. Then, the Seventh Sister name drops Ahsoka Tano. And Ezra doesn't do a really good job hiding the fact that he knows her. And the sister whips out her lightsaber, and she's ready to have more fun. Then the fifth brother comes in with Sabine and shoves her down beside Ezra. And he looks at the seventh sister and he asks if she's gotten any information. And the seventh sister is like, bitch, I don't gotta tell you nothing. And she wants Ezra to contact the rebel fleet, and he refuses. Sabine lies, saying that Zeb is dead. Or maybe she lies? She might have actually thought that he was killed in the blast, or she's playing the Inquisitors? It's all really unclear whether or not she's playing the Inquisitors in that scene, I don't know. But Zeb is not dead, and he's lamenting that he's in really way over his head with these Force users. But damn it, he's gonna suck it up, and he's gonna save those kids. And suddenly, Ezra and Sabine get a call from Zeb, a.k.a. Commander Meleerun. The fifth brother tells Ezra to answer him, and Sabine starts to tell Zeb that they don't need help. But when the fifth brother grabs Sabine's head and puts a lightsaber to her throat, Ezra quickly says that they should probably bring Kanan and Ahsoka with him. Zeb tells them that it'll all be fine and to keep their chins up. So the baddies take the kids down to the hangar bay, and Ezra and Sabine figure out the chin-up thing, and there's Zeb, who's parked the minivan on the ceiling. And the moment the Inquisitors notice him, Sabine and Ezra sprint out of the way, and Zeb starts shooting the shit out of the Inquisitors with the Phantom. And he brings the ship around, and Ezra and Sabine jump in the back of it. But as Zeb tries to fly out of there, the Inquisitors grab it with the Force, and the blast doors start to close. Sabine adds in some cover fire, and it makes the fifth brother holding the ship with the Force to block her shots with his lightsaber. And the seventh sister can't hold the Phantom by herself, and Zeb punches it, and they fly out of there. Because, and everyone is like, Zeb is the best! Zeb is awesome! We know Zeb is awesome. We love him on the show. And they make it back to the Rebel fleet, where Kanan and Rex are still going on about their kerfuffle earlier. And the kids come back in, and they tell them about the Inquisitors. And they ask Kanan why he didn't warn them about more Inquisitors. And Kanan doesn't have an answer for them. They send the kids out of the room, and Hera, Kanan, and Rex wonder what this means, and if Ahsoka knew about them. Spoiler warning from the Ahsoka novel, she totally does know that there's more than one Inquisitor. But at least the episode ends with Kanan and Hera holding hands, and nothing else matters but their love and my ship. The end!
The end.
What did you think of Act 3?
All right, just my shallow notes are I noted they used Commander Meleerun again. And Hera hugging on Kanan.
I have that note too. I love like the show long Commander Meleerun throughout the entire series. It's just such a fun little end joke.
My other short note is Ezra once again is just a crappy like poker player. You know, he's like,
you know, though, like
they're getting walked out there. I know it's for the story and stuff, but he's like, chin up, chin up, chin up, looks up. And then he's like, psst, psst, hey, look, chin up, up, up. You know, it's like a little too obvious, you know.
I thought you were talking about like when he was like, I don't know Ahsoka Tano. Who's this? What's an Ahsoka? But, you know, like sometimes people just naturally wear their feelings on like their emotions on their sleeve. Some people are just like that. I'm like that. I'm very bad at hiding secrets. Like I always wear my emotions on my sleeve. Like don't ever tell me a secret because I'm really bad at keeping secrets.
All right, so my big note on this is where I was like, oh, okay, you know, in this one when Ezra's dealing with Sarah Michelle Gellar with Buffy the Vampire Slayer, I was like, okay, Ezra's being kind of cocky, but he's not being cocky in like a dumb kid sort of way.
He's being cocky in a really good way.
In a real Jedi way. And I'm like, oh man, he's already figured out. I mean, this chick is a threat to him, but she's not up to snuff, he's faced off with Grande and she's not up to snuff, you know, she's a beginner compared to stuff he's seen in the past. And
Granted,
I'm like,
he didn't do too good against Grande. It was Kanan.
No, but I mean, Grande's dead. Yeah. And Grande came after him several times and was fought off and eventually defeated. And he's just like, oh, she's kind of, and she obviously does have the hots for him. She definitely has a little crush on him. She says something about him being pretty. And he's like, oh, well. But that was also like her belying a little bit of, you know, how she, you know, giving him a little information that is kind of a weakness towards her. So I think like these. at this point, I was like, okay, these Inquisitors are kind of like diminishing returns. They don't represent the threat that Grande did. There's a couple of them, so that ups the threat a little bit. But, and especially coming on the heels of Darth Vader coming and batting our heroes around a little bit, these guys just aren't as threatening, you know?
Yeah.
So it's kind of like the Inquisitor diminishing return thing. They should have built up to Grande with these guys and then to Vader or something. But it doesn't really bother me, though, you know. I just sort of noted it. It's like I don't feel the sense of threat from the Inquisitors anymore. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and that goes back to, like, what I was saying. Like, I really want the Inquisitors to be so much, like, because they look cool. They each one has their own kind of style. Each one has their own kind of character. One's kind of the muscle. One's kind of, like, the smart, technician one, or a tactician one. And, like, Grande was, like, both of those things. And, like, they each have their own kind of style and grace, but, like, they never do anything with them.
Right,
and that's,
right.
Like, that's what bothers me, is like now watching this show, knowing their whole story.
It's all style and no substance. Grande had a lot more substance to him than then, but, you know, but then if you put Grande up against like a Darth Vader, it's just like, puh, whatever, pating, you know?
Yeah, and like, I just.
Even like a Dooku, you know?
Or even like, and then yeah, I agree with everything. But it makes me wonder how, like, we would have reacted to them differently if we were doing this show week by week, like Geeky Bubble or something, like when the show was coming out.
Right. We probably would have been a lot more impressed.
Yeah, because I remember the first time I ever watched this episode. Because, like, this is still, like, one of my favorite episodes, like, top episodes of Rebels. I really do like this episode. It's probably, like, my, like, top 20. And it's, I really do like this episode a lot. But it's just, at the end of the day, like, watching it again, knowing that there's no story for them is just very, as I said, it kind of dampens their story, because there is no story.
Yeah.
And, which sucks, because I remember the first time I watched this episode, and I loved it. Like, I loved everything about it. I was, like, Googling, who are these guys, and, like, looking at, like, all the stuff, so.
Wah, wah.
Yeah.
But that's all I got on this one.
My first note actually has nothing to do with this episode. Well, it kind of does, and that's why I brought it up. So when a few nights ago, I was watching some Clone Wars with my stepmom, and we watched Children of the Force, which is the episode where Cad Bane steals the Force-sensitive kids for Palpatine. And I noticed, and we know that, like, back then, like, this was one of his early plans to make what would eventually become the Inquisitorius as we know it today. But he said one particular line that stuck out to me that I never noticed before. And he was talking about the babies surviving, like talking about the experiments on the babies. And he also mentions the babies surviving the surgery. I never heard the words. I missed the word surgery the first time I heard it. So I'm wondering if the surgery was to maybe put like some sort of inhibitor chips, kind of like the clones in the babies, to help like quell their light side stuff.
I don't know, or maybe it has to do with something like, it seems like all Sith people, maybe not at first, but eventually end up physically deformed, you know?
Yeah.
Like Anakin and the Palpatine, and maybe not as much Dooku, but you know what I mean? So maybe they just like, I don't know, but if I was going to have somebody that was sort of a lower level sub-Sith supernatural force user, I think an inhibitor chip might be a good idea, you know?
Yeah, because I never heard that word before. And the only reason it kind of stuck out to me, because I just finished doing the outline for this episode, was the Seventh Sister has kind of that, like, borderline mechanical voice when she speaks. It has, like, a very, like, mechanical, tint to it, where it sounds just a touch robotic. And we know that she's a Miri Allen, like Luminara and Barriss, and neither of them had that kind of voice, so it's not their species.
How about this? They put in an inhibitor chip that keeps you from attacking anybody who outranks you. So that's why.
But that would take away the competition of, like, the Inquisitors. Like, if you deem that the person who I'll rank you as is not fitted, you can shank them and take their place.
That's true. If that's what they do. But that could, I mean, I was just saying that to sort of retro explain the scene where she says, no, we'll use him to, as bait for the others, and the other one deferred. Maybe his inhibitor chip wouldn't let him, like, just cut her head off and then kill the Jedi kids too.
Yeah. So, like, the whole thing is, like, it's interesting because I'd never noticed that line before, and it kind of stuck out to me. And I was like, what surgery? But back to the actual episode. I'll probably say this multiple times this season because it's one of, like, my, like, biggest pet peeves of this season. And the Seventh Sister is Amiri Allen, like Bera Sophie from Clone Wars. And a quick reminder, in case you've never seen Clone Wars or forgot, Bera Sophie is the woman who sold out Ahsoka and framed her for murder and eventually got Ahsoka kicked out of the council. Or got Ahsoka kicked out of the Jedi Order, and then they caught Barriss and she gave this big rousing speech, and we find out later that one of the temple guards that was at Barriss's trial was actually the person who would become the Grand Inquisitor. Like, he was, that was the speech of hers that made him turn to the dark side. And I'll say this once and I'll say this again, the Seventh Sister should have been Barriss.
It would have made so much more sense and added some depth to it, you know?
Yeah, and especially, like, when she was like, oh, we know about Ahsoka Tano. Like, that would could have, because that, if it was Barriss, that could have been very interesting, because they could have really played with her character then, like, I like her wanting to get Ahsoka, like,
right,
her,
right.
Having, like, there's so much they could have done with that. And they wouldn't even need to really explain it, like, if people from the Clone Wars, because, like, they're already playing them as evil TM. So, like, if people hadn't seen the Clone Wars and didn't know the background story, like they could have still played it, like, 1D evil TM, because that's what they're doing anyway. But people who have seen Clone Wars, if she was Barriss, like, we would know, like, that's a big deal if she's personally hunting Ahsoka.
And it wouldn't have altered anything that they would have had to do otherwise in these stories. It wouldn't have changed anything about her character, you know. There's just no reason why she couldn't have been, you know. There literally is no reason why she couldn't have been. It wouldn't be like, well, that wouldn't match up with this.
And, like, Barriss was, like, primed to be Inquisitor. Like, she was, like, she hated the Jedi, she did all this evil stuff. She committed, like, terrorism that killed multiple people. Like, she is, like, prime Inquisitor feelings. And she's the one that made the Grand Inquisitor turn to the dark side in the first place. And, like, we never see her again? What the fuck? Like, she was, like, the prime candidate to be an Inquisitor. Ugh. I'm especially gonna probably bring this up in the episode where the Inquisitors are stealing babies and the Seventh Sister faces off against Ahsoka. I will bring this note up again, at least in that episode.
I'm sure you will.
I will, because that is one of my biggest pet peeves of the season. So, in the last episode, during the clone arc, when they met Rex and Gregor and Wolf and stuff like that, I was talking about how Zeb really didn't do much in that arc. He was just there to get eaten by a Jupa, and then he was just kind of there for the rest of the episode, and he just didn't do anything. So I'm really glad that Zeb is the MVP of this episode. He's the one that saves the day, and he's the one that gets them all out of there and comes up with the plan. And that's what he should be doing. He should be shining as much as the rest of the cast, and he should be coming up with plans like that, because he was the captain of the Honor Guard. And I'm just really glad that they gave him the moment and they let Zeb save the day this week. And it wasn't like Ezra pulling out Jedi bullshit or something. But I also relate the moment that, like, when he's coming up with a plan and he has Chopper and stuff, he has a moment where he's at the Phantom and he kind of stops. And he admits, he's like, you know, all these Force user peoples, these Jedis and these Inquisitors and stuff, I'm really in over my head. And, like, he admits that, but he has a moment where he's just like, but you know what? I'm in over my head, but I'm not leaving those kids behind. I came here with those kids, and I'm leaving with those kids. And I like that, because there's all these Jedi and these Inquisitors, and he's just a soldier. Like, he's a regular, everyday soldier guy, but he wants to step up and fight them just as much. And that's such a really nice moment for Zeb.
And it shows you can, you know, the Inquisitors are intimidating, but you can outwit them with your brains, a ship, and some guns.
Yeah.
And get away.
I also have to wonder if they even knew that Zeb was there. So, like, he was kind of like the wild card that they probably, if they knew they were there, they wrote him off. And if they didn't know they were there, then that was to his advantage. So he used that.
It appeared that he could have been killed the way that, like...
They framed it, yeah.
They framed it. So they probably just assumed he was done, you know?
Yeah.
And it seems like Ezra... You couldn't tell if Ezra was just faking it or not, but he might have thought Zeb was done, too.
Mm-hmm. So... My next note is at the end in the final scene when they were like, Kanan, why didn't you tell us about any Inquisitors? And like he was like, I didn't know there were more than one. I didn't know. And then I had the thought of, why didn't Ahsoka Tola tell them that there are more Inquisitors? Like, she knew. She knew that there was more than one Inquisitors, and there was not a moment where she'd have been like, guys, just so you know, you killed Grande, but like that line where she's like, now they'll all come. More are coming. Look at them and go, by the way, there's more than one Inquisitor.
Yeah, I can't really think of any, military reason not to tell them. So, yeah, you're right.
Yeah, I love Ahsoka, but she dropped the ball on that one. She should have, and I think it was Siege of Lothal when she was like, they'll all be coming now. That's when she should have looked at them and went, there's more than one Inquisitor. Just FYI.
She was probably just trying to keep everybody out of her Jedi, Jedi business separated.
They always tell the other two Jedi because that's exactly who the Inquisitors are going to hunt. They're going to be coming after Kanan
and
Ezra.
But yeah, well, maybe she was thinking that the less they knew, the safer they were. I don't know. I'm just trying to think. I'm just spitballing.
Yeah. So, and my last note of the episode was, and it's kind of like a two-parter note and stuff like that. I really just like this episode because it's the space kids. It's just them. Zeb, Ezra, and Sabine have a completely different dynamic when the three of them are in charge of themselves. And not having Hera and Kanan there to turn to, it was really cool to watch them on their own and have to figure out this plan on their own and having them to rely on each other. And I like that dynamic. Because usually they're paired with either Kanan or Hera, who's in charge. So
yeah,
it's nice
nobody
having...
was really the adult in this one. They sort of took turns being the adult.
Yeah, and I liked that.
They all got little chances to be the adult.
Yeah, and I really liked that because it actually gave a really different dynamic that we don't normally see in the show. And my other one is I also, on the same note that about the space kids by themselves, it also is a good note of, Hera's leadership. Because she trusts them to go out there and do this mission on their own. She knows and trusts in their abilities that they're going to be okay. And that's really good leadership on her part because she could be very overprotective of them and be like, no, you guys can't go out there without one of us and stuff like that. But she trusts them to be okay and to figure it out. And
also, practically, she has to get to that point and do that, too. It's probably not easy for her to do that, but...
Yeah. So, that's a really good note on Hera to show what kind of leadership she is because, they probably couldn't spare her or Kanan. Well, actually, Kanan's been all day playing chess with Rex. So that just killed that argument because we know he started arguing with Rex and it ends with him playing chess with Rex. So whatever.
Right.
But she's a really good leader that she can trust them that much to go out on their own to take care of business and be okay to do it. And that's a good mark on her. So good for you, Hera. Good for you, Space Mom.
Good on you.
Space Mom is the best mom. But that's all I have for the episode. Did you have anything else?
No, you want me to score it up?
Score it up, my friend.
Oh, it had nice atmosphere and generally a good show, but it's nothing that we haven't really seen before and even more intensely. So I gave it a 7.5.
Okay. For me, even with the, overall arcing flaw of the Inquisitor storyline, I still really love this episode. I loved it the first time I saw it. I still really like it to this day. I love the Seventh Sister. I love everything about her. I love how she moves and looks and talks. I just love her. And I really like that Zeb got a moment to shine. Like, that he was the MVP of the episode, and he was the one that saved the day. And I just like having the kids all by themselves. They just bring this, like, new dynamic for a solo mission that we don't always get to see. So, and the entire episode just looks great. It's scary. It's dark. Everything's in close quarters. It has a very claustrophobic feel to it. And I really like that about that. So, yeah, I really like this episode. I gave it an 8 out of 10. It's still one of my favorites to this day.
Well, still only 0.5 over mine.
Yeah, not that bad. I actually thought about giving it a 7, but there's just so many, like, little things I still really like about it. And so I was like, I can't get it. That's my average episode, and this is above what I feel for an average episode, so I had to, so... Well, as always, we would love to hear your feedback on iTunes, Twitter, or on the Two True Freaks Facebook page. This week, our feedback comes from the Two True Freaks Facebook page for our episode, Rebel Resolve. Take it away, Chris.
All right, this one comes from Paul C. Kelly.
Ooh, yeah.
I thought the idea of using droids to transmit messages back and forth due to the communication tower being blown up was pretty creative on part of the writers on this episode. Oh, yeah. Great continuity as well. Oh, yeah. Tarkin, on the other hand, was toned down a bit after the last episode of executing the two Imperial officers. But hard to top that one. Oh, no.
They sure got ahead in life.
Yeah, you know, Farkin has his ups and downs.
You can't be Farkin up everything all the time.
Exactly. He just, it probably depends on what kind of text he's getting from his farm boys.
Well, I'm hungry. It's candy time. Can we do the Loker? There's two of them. There's a vanilla one and there's a cocoa mix one.
Lothar, you say?
Loker. It's Loacker.
Like Lochnar?
Yeah, one's blue, one's brown. There's a vanilla and there's a chocolate one.
Alright, let me see if I can find it. I thought the Lochnar was, Ooh, what's this?
Ooh. Well, if you don't know what we're doing, Chris hates American Kit Kat, because he's dumb. And our friend Dario sends us candy from all over the world to review. And Dario is Chris's co-podcaster for Eat and Beat It podcast, so...
I found him.
Do you want to do the blue one, or do you want to do the brown one? Because they're apparently from two different countries, so...
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, yes. Listen, because... Okay, so they have very similar packaging. And crispy cocoa wafers with delicate milk cream filling, crispy wafers. But this one's Gofretes Crustalantes, and the other one is Galatas Crujentes.
Which one do you want to do?
Let's do the chocolate.
All right, the chocolate one is made in Austria.
But it says number one in Italy on the front of it, is the funny part.
All right.
Ooh. Whatever.
Well, it smells like a wafer.
It's a total, it's like a chocolate, I mean, it looks like a white chocolate Kit Kat from the...
But they're not, they're in little pieces.
Are they?
Mm-hmm.
I'm having trouble.
Oh, that's God.
Oh, they are the little shorties.
Mmm.
Okay.
Mm. It's not too sweet, it's delicious. This reminds me of like the cheap little like store brand wafers you can get in grocery stores. But a lot more delicious and not so cardboardy.
No. There's a Goya kind of chocolate cracker that's like this, but it tastes more like Cocoa Puffs. This one has a more dark chocolate, a little, you know, less sweet and more bitter.
Mm. Yeah, it is. Mmm. Well, thank you, Dario. We love you. I'm hungry, so I'm like going to town on these.
Uh-huh.
I like scarfed my dinner before, and I just barely ate anything. I was just like, get food in my face, let's go.
That's kind of what I did, and then I didn't have dessert because I knew this was coming afterwards, so I've been sort of craving my dessert all through the show.
Mm. Mm. Well, where can people find you, Chris?
You can find me at twotruefreaks.com. That is our website, as you know, where we have all the podcasts coming up. When you go there, you'll see them. All the latest and greatest coming out. And you can also find us on iTunes. And if you want to just see what we're posting, go to Facebook and look up Two True Freaks, and you'll find the Two True Freaks page. And we have sort of a generic page where all the podcasters put up their shows, and you can talk about each individual show. And then we've got the Two True Freaks Cantina, which is another group, which is just sort of general discussion. And if you really want to get adventurous, you can wade into the humongous sewer that is Twitter. Not that Facebook is much better. As a matter of fact, I'm sure they're battling out. It's a big sewer battle to see one's a garbage fire, one's a sewer. How about that? But our Twitter feed is run by the stalwart and clad in his garbage proof suit, Mr. Gene, the Twitter machine.
Gene.
And he brings a little of his style and expertise to our Twitter page. He's the man who listens to pretty much every podcast that ever gets made by anybody in the world. Thus breaking every law of time and space. But that's what we do here at Two True Freaks. But that's where you can find me. Where can they find you, Hope?
You can find me at JGuysAndJedi on Twitter. I run our Twitter account. You can also find me on Twitter at Hope Molinax. I also have a website called geekygirlexperience.com, which you can look me up on. And I also write fan fiction on Archive of Our Own under the name Chaos Lydia. My main story is called Forces of Gravity, but I also beta read Valkyrie Strike. And I also have a little project called The Lucky Leku. And it's all Star Wars fan fiction, so you can also find me on there. But that's all I have. I have no idea what next week is.
Neither do I.
Is it the first Hondo episode? Brothers of a Broken Horn?
I think it might be. You know what? I think it might be.
Okay. Oh my gosh, we're going to have Hondo. I love Hondo.
Yeah. That's as we'll talk about next week. It's got its ups and downs these days. But yeah.
Yeah, Hondo. But it's not Hondo's fault.
I know. Lando didn't do no. Hondo has shown a willingness to sell kids into slavery too. So.
Well, he is a pirate. Yes. So. But yeah, it's not Hondo's fault that his voice actor isn't great, but but we'll see you guys next week, okay? Bye.
Bye.
Visit our website at twotruefreaks.com. Two True Freaks is always spelled TWOTRUEFREAKS.
You can email Two True Freaks directly at twotruefreaks@gmail.com.
Two True Freaks and all of its excellent affiliates are available on iTunes, and you can choose to subscribe to either the entire network if you wish, or pick whichever individual shows you want to follow. We have so many shows to choose from, there's just bound to be one that appeals to your particular fandom. Just search Two True Freaks with an exclamation mark at the end, space, and the number 2.
You can find Two True Freaks on Facebook. Just search for Two True Freaks. If you ever leave your house and you actually have friends, why don't you tell them about Two True Freaks?
If you've enjoyed our show, please, won't you take a moment to rate us on iTunes? That helps others find the show too.
Thanks for listening.
And join us every Monday for new episodes of
Two True Freaks.